Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March 21.
Yes.
And
first
it
day
is
of spring, and it's snowing.
It's snowing like a lot. Mug. It's like a nor'easter.
Like a whole month.
Like 8 inches, 9 inches of snow. Right, it's coming down crazy, like right now.
Yup.
So hopefully this is the last one of the year of the season, I should say, because until next December. Yeah. Damn, crazy. How y'all doing though?
I'm good. I mean, I've been in the house. Because of the snow.
Yeah.
Same here.
I'm off, though.
I left out this morning.
Yeah, I went off a little bit.
How bad is it up by you, Sean?
It's not that bad. I mean, it's I'm a little afraid because trees have been weakened. And so what hasn't fallen could fall. Because the snow up here is, it's not like a light snow. It's a very thick, dense snow. So it's going to be really heavy. You kind of get the sense. So, and it's like not, it's inconsistent. So, you know, we'll see how the accumulation goes throughout the rest of the night.
Yeah. It's supposed to like, I saw on the news, they said like between now and I think midnight or one, it's supposed to be the heaviest and they're supposed to, and they're not supposed to stop till, like almost morning time, so
yeah, 4 o'clock. Yeah, 4 o'clock is like the cutoff. So we'll see.
Yeah, so we'll see what's going on. What's going on? We'll see what's happening. God damn it. It was something, man. That was something I wanted to talk about. I'm kind of blanking on it right now.
Well,
but
I have a quick shout out while you're trying to figure that out. Shout out to what is Mr. Mike's last name? Hold on, let me look this up. If you guys are a regular Subway rider, you know that there are a couple
of that old singer
cats.
Guy? Yeah, I saw
there
that.
Are a couple of old cats who really get it in on a regular basis in the Subway systems, and one of them is Mr. Mike Young. He's Mike Y-U-N-G on Twitter, which I'm sure somebody else runs his Twitter account, because no way that old-ass nigga
is on point like that.
He is literally homeboy. What's the name of that bro that was at the Oscars, Sean, who was looking at his phone on
Gary Owen.
He's literally Gary. Except he can sing. He looks like Yo Gotti's dad.
Wow.
Okay. He does. He looks like he could be Yo Gotti's dad. Anyway, so he always is busking in the subways. He's got a great old soul voice, like Sam Cooke era voice. And
that gravelly voice.
Yeah, that gravelly voice. And you could tell he probably been through some things, but he still looks healthy, you know, still about himself. And
I'm off that narcotic now.
Pray to God. I asked him if he would deliver me. And Paradigm signed him as a client, which takes balls. For real, because even if he was an established singer, like the man, he's definitely 50 something. He might be 60.
I think he's older than he's in his 60s probably. Yeah,
he might be in his 60s. You know, your man be wearing like the Jordan brand sneakers and the long jean shorts.
The ones that just show. No, your man Damon.
You stop right at your calf.
Your man Damon from Married to the Medicine had a pair of them shoes on. I'm like, this nigga is a doctor. And he wearing the shorts down to his ankles. Good God.
They stop right at the bottom of your calf. He be wearing them joints. And, you know, with the acid wash in the front. Like, that's
Word.
His piece. So I'm very happy for him because this means that now he can actually get some gigs. And apparently he's working on a solo album that has a Kickstarter up for. Trying to raise some money so he can actually release some music. So just congratulations to you, Mr. Mike, because you know what?
You gonna put some money up for him?
I don't know about all that.
I put a little something on it.
I might put a little something on it. I mean,
$17, $18 or something.
Yeah, I might do a little something. I might buy it when it come out. I don't know. I do drop a little something in his basket every once in a while. I have definitely given him.
That's something I'll make the kids do. I'll definitely, because if you guys are musicians, if you guys are taking this craft seriously, then you have to go out. My thing is you have to go out and support musicians. Okay.
When we're in New Orleans,
go put something in that bucket.
Yeah, that's real. And I do that when I see him, not every time, because I see him pretty frequently. Like, you ride the train regularly, you know him.
There's that group of guys that comes through the train.
This little light of mine. Yeah.
Oh my God. Maybe some new songs, niggas.
Look, this is what they rehearsed. This is what they rehearsed, nigga.
You know they used to be on the corner doing the shoo-wop, doo-wop, the doo.
Oh my God.
But they sound good. But yeah. So shout out to Mr. Mike. Shout out to whatever agent at Paradigm did that signing. Because that really, you know, there is, not to go off too much of a tangent, but there have been a couple of different studies done where people have captured video of professional level artists in the New York subways just to show how much New Yorkers just don't give a fuck.
Absolutely.
Like professional violinists. One time, Brandy was in kind of like costumes.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I've seen one where there was literally like a Carnegie Hall level professional ass violinist in the middle of Grand Central. Like, you could put anybody in there. There's good music in the streets and the subways of New York, but New Yorkers do not care. We're so used to it. But there are some of those characters that you see all the time, like a Mr. Mike. So, and there's a couple of them in Penn Station. They be getting it in. So I am happy for Mr. Mike. That's a great story. And, you know, he'll probably be at the Beacon at some point. Maybe not the Beacon. He'll be somewhere.
Yeah, maybe not the Beacon. That's a pretty big room.
He'll be over at Minton.
Yeah, he'll be at some smaller room, but he'll be doing something, you know, with a suit on. And my grandbabies up in here, they come to see me.
He'll be at the Billy Holiday Theater down in BK or something at Restoration Plaza.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I only got
a couple tickets, and I can't give everybody tickets. I know somebody got to pay.
Right. He'll be at Londell's. You know, something like that.
Baby shower.
Exactly. be selling tickets, you know, on the street and all that. Come see me tonight, you know. So,
right.
You know, God bless you, your favorite
restaurant that does live music on Thursdays through Saturdays. That's
exactly. Showman's Lounge and all that type of shit.
Yeah.
God bless them. I know what it was, but I can't get the story together. I saw something. I saw a thing on TV about this woman who found out she's like 70 years old and she found out she was black. I can't pull the story.
What did she think she was, Jewish?
She thought she was white. Yeah, she was. Spent 70 years as a white lady.
With a nose
as wide as a motherfucking truck.
Her nose looked like James Evans' nose.
You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, bro?
Miss Verna. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Miss Verna.
Her name is Verna. It might be White. I think might have been her last name. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, apparently, the daddy ain't the daddy. I don't believe that.
Obviously.
Apparently, the daddy, the mother, and I'm using air quotes here, the mother died in an accident.
Mm.
And then the daddy basically abandoned her. And then she was brought in by, like, another black couple or a black couple who did not have children and was basically raised as her, you know, their own. And then apparently she went through her, you know, records and found out that she was white. There's nothing about this woman.
Wait, so she thought she was black and she's actually white?
So she's saying.
But she thought she was white. She's actually black.
She thought she was black.
Yes.
When she went through her records, that she was white. Her name is Verna Bird.
Okay, and you started by saying she thought she was white and found out she was black. That's why I was confused.
I couldn't pull the story together. But if you look at the pictures of her, and you look at her now, she's still alive. She's only 72. If you look at her now, she's black. Like, she's a light skinned black lady. Like, it's, so I don't know what she's all of a sudden she's like, oh my God, I'm white. No, you're not. Like, the record
is she mixed or is she like for real white?
She's probably mixed.
She looked like those really, you know, very light blacks, but you can clearly tell they're black.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Even with the really light skin. Like, I know a family like that. Like, I know several families like that. Like, nothing about that woman said nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Literally nothing about that woman. I could see that woman 4 aisles away in the supermarket, and I know her pound cake is hitting, okay? Yep. And she'd be at church every Sunday.
Because they got pictures, you know, in the story that is on ABC News, there's pictures of her, of course, show pictures of her when she was younger. And even in the pictures, she's just like, oh, and you can see, like, the texture of her hair. It's like, she's a light-skinned black girl. That's all. Like, I don't know what, when all of a sudden this some white thing is coming, it was just a bizarre story. But then it got me to thinking, because I was watching Sneaker Shopping, Complex does this thing called Sneaker Shopping where they take like an artist and they go to a sneaker store and they talk about the sneakers that they loved over the years. And they did one with Pete Wentz recently. And it just still blows my mind that Pete Wentz is out here straight passing. Like, he's like, nobody even questions the fact that he's not full on white. Everybody thinks he straightens his hair. And it's just like, people just rock out. Like, when he straightens his hair, he does look white. So it's like, people don't even.
Or like Slash. Like, Slash will tell you if you ask Slash. And you could tell Slash is something.
Yep.
But nobody, guitar player for one of the biggest rock and roll bands ever. And nobody really like, yo, Slash is black.
Yep. And, like, and of course, Quincy's daughter.
Rashida Kidada. Rashida
Jones passing like a motherfucker. Like, it's like, wow, y'all just flying through. Like, it's just a very interesting that even in 2018, there's still people who are doing that. Like, just straight up.
And it's not even really, I don't even know if it's a passing, but they just gonna let people assume what they assume. Like, that always really interested me about Kidada versus Rashida, because Kidada was very much always with the black folks. And Rashida was always with the white folks.
Mm-hmm.
People just always put her in that place. The same thing with Maya Rudolph. People just, I mean, even though Maya will, you know, move in black spaces, play black characters, do all that good stuff, she very much, I think, is perceived as, I don't even know if she's really perceived as an actress of color, or if we keep it in a buck.
Yeah, I don't know. Maya's an interesting one, because I don't know. Obviously, you know, because I know who her mom is, I look at her in a different way. But, like, I don't know how she's
perceived. I think we all accept her.
Even on Saturday Night Live, I mean, she played Whitney. Like, she played black. Yeah, she played everybody. She played white characters, but she played black characters too. I don't know.
It's not even like some of these people are doing it secretly, but Maya is a. Maya and Kidada are both curious cases to me, because we know who their parents are. We know they're. It's not a secret. Like, it's no secret. But they still in white Hollywood in a very kind of specific sort of way. Like, yeah. Maya's never done a black movie. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, no, not saying no. She needs to be marginalized to that, but she very much is, you know, she kind of gets white actress privilege.
Yeah. It's a phenomenon. Like, it's a very interesting phenomenon that it's still going on, like, in 2018. Mm-hmm. I guess it's never gonna stop. And, like, you gotta kind of like a guy like Malcolm Gladwell probably could, but he seems to kind of go his way to be like, nah, I'm Jamaican, you know, my mother's Jamaican. Right.
I think it's when he's asked, right? That's part of it.
Malcolm kind of brings it up. He'll be like, no, because my Jamaican grandmother always told me about. He'll say stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll bring it up. But.
I don't know if the average person, even who reads Malcolm, knows that. Or like, not to make it a whole thing, but there was somebody else I was just thinking of, and then I just totally lost my train of thought on them. There was somebody else I was just thinking of, but it'll come back to me. But whatever. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Pete Wentz thing is really just kind of blows me, because it's like, wow, you know, and like Bruce said, Vern the Bird She's like, oh, I'm white. Like, come on, lady. Come on now. Just stop the bullshit. You black.
I mean, some of it is, you know, what do you call it? Nature versus nurture, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I guess. I wanted to mention this. The Shy finale. Did y'all get to see it?
Yes.
Not me. I haven't watched The Shy. Never. So.
Oh, you never. You didn't watch the series.
It's really good, Sean.
I thought you were watching the series. You need to binge it then. It's really good. It's excellent, actually.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think about the finale, Nai?
I thought it was good. I'll be honest. It wasn't quite as you know how some of these shows, like the finales are super heavy cliffhangers,
and jaw dropping shit.
Yeah, it was no jaw dropping. Like, there was definitely enough left to be like, oh shit, let me come back and see what happens. Especially in the case of Reggie and what's my man's name? What's Eazy-E's name?
Oh, Jason Mitchell. Oh, on the show, his name is Brandon.
He's not cute.
Brandon.
Especially in the case of Reggie and Brandon, yeah. I feel for Brandon. Brandon just been getting himself caught up in all kind of shit. Especially in the case of Reggie and Brandon, but there was a lot that was kind of like wrapped up, you know, and now, like, let's move on. I'm definitely still coming back for season two, but I was kind of surprised that it wasn't like a, oh my God, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, I can't, what's going to happen next type thing.
Yeah. It wasn't a lot of cliffhangers. You're right. Yeah. It wasn't a lot of cliffhangers. I want to mention, so it was announced this week that Cynthia Nixon, who played Miranda on Sex and the City, has decided to run for the governor of New York State. I didn't even know.
Yeah, she's been hinting at it for a minute.
Yeah, I didn't realize she was born and raised in New York. I didn't know where she's from. I thought she was like, you know, most actresses who might have moved here from somewhere else, but she's born and raised in the city and all that.
I think she like went to school in Philly or something like that. Came
yeah, she went to Hunter. Yeah. She went to Hunter College. She's like a real New Yorker. So she's decided to run for governor and challenge Andrew Cuomo. I know she went to city schools. Maybe she went to Hunter High School then. So she decided to run for governor of New York State. What's your thoughts on this?
I'm not a resident.
So I don't.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead now. I think we're losing now.
Yeah.
Can you guys not hear me?
Yeah, can you now? It was kind of breaking up.
Sorry. I'm going to say that I think that they now think we're a new trend. You know, we look back and look at Schwarzenegger, Sonny Bono. We can look at Al Franken. And, you know, there's been a thing that maybe might be qualified. I don't really know how. I know she's been very politically involved. I don't know really anything about her beyond that. I also am not really that mad at Governor Cuomo right now, but even though somebody needs to fix the fucking MTA, but I don't
now,
know.
Now, that's the question. The MTA, does that fall under Cuomo or does that fall under the city?
It's Cuomo.
It's a state thing?
It's the state. Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's the state. Yeah, it's the state. And what happens is that state, that funds that should have been going to the MTA over the years keep getting diverted to other places by the state.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
It's the state. And I mean, it's that we're at crisis point with the MTA right now. Like, worse than it's been since like the fucking 70s or some shit. It's awful.
It's always trains getting stuck and it's craziness underground.
It's awful. It's more crowded than it's been since I've lived back in New York. And it is also, wait, hold on. It's more crowded than it's been since I've lived back in New York. And the delays are worse. The track issues are worse. There's always construction going on. There's and they keep raising the fares like every 2 years. I feel like it used to be like 4 years or something like that. So you guys keep raising the fares, but you have higher ridership. but you have more problems and you're just not dealing with it. So I say all that to say, if she runs on that platform, she might get some traction. But other than that, I don't know.
Yeah, but even that though, that's just, even if she runs on that platform, that's just New York City. Like, the state is massive. Like, the people in Syracuse don't give a shit about the MTA.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever, nigga. Like, what the got to do with Rochester? That's what I think is going to be the thing. Like, again,
it's
even
she's
even
a New York City girl.
That's what I'm saying. Even in her commercial that I saw, it was city. It was based in the city. It was like her in the city, you know, taking her daughter to school. I think it was her daughter, son and daughter to school, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's cool because that's where she lives. But, like, people in Buffalo and Binghamton don't give a flying shit about New York City. Like, that's, you know, 500 miles away, or well, 300 miles away. Like, that's going to be the thing. Like, what are you going to do for us up here on these farmers and these prison complexes and these, because, you know, as we all know, like, once you go past a certain point in New York State going up, that's just like Mississippi, man. That's just not progressive at all.
Yeah, and that could be her issue, but openly, she is running strongly on LGBTQ, you know, representation. Can you guys hear me? You guys can't hear me?
Now it's better. Whatever you do.
Oh, okay.
Don't move.
She is running strongly on LGBTQ representation on a plate outside of the city.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah. In the five boroughs, that's cool. But, you know, up around, you know, what's that shit called? I should forget that
upstate?
Shit. Way upstate. Yeah, way upstate. I forget what's it, you know, Buffalo or whatever. Like, way up there? Come on, B. That's...
Yeah. I mean, maybe she shakes the table. Maybe she, puts something out there that lights a fire and there is some sort of change. I don't necessarily know that I agree with somebody just walking into a governorship, especially a governorship of a state that matters. Like, we're not fucking Montana. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's New York. Like, yeah. There are a few states where the governor really matters. Like, that shit is a big to do. It's a big deal. I don't know that somebody should be able to or can be able to just simply walk into that. I think, you know, if you have infrastructure, if you have this sort of finances and money, you can probably figure it out. You can figure out your way to that office. It doesn't make you qualified or prepared for it. I think that there is a shit ton of bureaucracy at that level that I don't think that someone who is inexperienced with navigating bureaucracy can just walk in and do, right? We're talking about the state legislature. We're talking about, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. getting shit passed. Like, there's nothing really sexy about the governorship, right? Like, you don't get to just have a townhouse on 73rd Street,
nah.
Central Park West. Like, you're, right. A lot of your time is going to be spent up in Albany.
And it's also huge to skip from, like, not even mayor, not even city council, not even anything. Like, you're skipping directly to governor.
Like, mm-hmm. like, let's start off with, you know, being on the co-op board, right? Like, let's get on the homeowners association board.
Yeah,
you know, and make sure Ms. Dara is keeping her cats in line.
Exactly.
We can maybe progress to this. But again, I think this is a spaghetti on a wall. I think this is, I'm just going to throw this out there. I think this is shoot for the, you know, moon and maybe you'll land on the stars type thing. I think maybe she'll become a person in the political space that can, you know, again, she'll get some cameras on her. She'll bring attention to some things. And I think that might be beneficial for some people that are underserved and underappreciated. But I don't see her as a governor. I just don't. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And just because Arnold Schwarzenegger and Ronald Reagan did it doesn't mean that they were good governors. Okay, they were both shit governors.
That's true too. That's very true, actually. You know, and your man too was half ass Jesse Ventura, so yeah, like, you know, I yeah, mean, so it's a lot. It means, you know, just in this area alone, like Nas said, it's the MTA, it's the fucking airports, it's the infrastructure of the city, that's just here. You know what I'm saying? Like, that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. The rest of the whole state, you know.
Yeah. So
I don't know, Miranda. I appreciate you, but you know, I think you're jumping out the window a little bit here.
I also definitely think, I think Sex and the City is going to heavily work against her, even though, like, you know, she's been politically involved for a minute. And she was apparently like a really strong presence at the Women's March earlier last year.
Okay.
But I think that Sex and the City, I think that the girl from Sex and the City is going to make it real hard for some people to take her seriously. I think it's going to be very hard for a lot of male voters to take her seriously.
I mean, right, you're hitting the nail on the head, because right now, even, and we talk, you know, when I hear people talking about it, or even just seeing people talk about it on Twitter, everybody calls her Miranda.
And it's unfair, to be perfectly, to be honest, it's absolutely unfair, because I don't think she is, just because I think someone is not qualified for a position doesn't mean that I think they should be treated as a joke. I don't think she, I think she means well,
yeah,
but I don't think she's qualified, right. but, and that's what's unfair, is that she will come off such. And even if she is, you know, right on a few points, or again, I think is able to, like I said, the proverbial shake the table and maybe rustle some feathers and make things a little uncomfortable, or make people answer questions that they normally get to bypass, I think that that's important. I think that it's okay to do that.
Yeah, I think it's important too. But again, I just know that, you know, that character was such a big character. Like I said,
also the least liked character.
Yeah, she was awful.
She's a horrible person. Everybody calls her Miranda. It's like, you know, dude, she is literally that character. Like, nah, I won't say again. I don't want to dog her personally. That character is literally that white lady that everybody hates in the city. She's rude. She's bumping into you on a train.
She's a know-it-all.
Yeah, you hold the door, she don't say thank you. She's the one bitching at the Apple store about Apple Care. Like, she's literally that character is that person that New Yorkers hate, you know? And I don't know, maybe that transfers to her, I don't know. Let's talk a little bit about, let's just go into the TV shit. Let's talk a little bit about the Married to the Medicine finale. So,
it's not part two. Finale. This is part two of three.
Part two of three, season finale. So part two came on this week. It was a doozy. Now, have you caught up?
I tried to watch part of it, but like I told you guys, I also haven't seen the whole season. So part of it was on the other night. It was like the men sitting around the table drinking or something.
Because
I've missed so much of the show, I was just kind of like, I'll just let y'all talk about it.
Okay, cool. So, this episode really weighed a lot heavily on Simone and Cecil's, cause Simone basically announced, not basically, Simone announced the fact that she was divorcing Cecil on the episode. And a lot of the cast members did not know that that she had filed papers. So, Jackie knew, cause that's her best buddy. And who's the other one that knew? Toya knew. Yeah, nobody else knew. So people were sitting there stunned that she said that, because people, I guess, had figured that they were working things out. And then that kind of just went kind of crazy. And then come find out that Cecil got a lady friend that, he said he's not touching it. Simone said that he ain't touching it. She's a golf buddy of his. They tight, they thick as thieves. And Simone, it was kind of ill, because Simone said they had this massive blow up, and Cecil was grabbing his shit to leave the crib. And I think he was going to play golf with the other woman. And Simone was like, yo, if you leave right now to go play golf with her, it's over. I'm filing papers. And that nigga Cecil left anyway. I was like, damn. Bro, you think he's touching it?
No, I don't, because I think that I don't mean to sound like a harsh man. I would assume this is not a very attractive woman, because Simone did not seem at all
threatened,
like in the least or in the slightest. Which, I mean, listen, it wouldn't say whether or not that he was sleeping with her, but they seemed pretty adamant, and I don't think that. At this point, I don't think they need to, you know, hide that sort of stuff. You know what I'm saying? I think, I think what it did do was, like a lot of this show, is that it really sort of laid out the issue of not necessarily infidelity, but like that really sort of murky friendship line. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Where like he is clearly, while he is not having sex with this woman, there is clearly an intimacy to their relationship that yes. has put a wedge in his marriage.
Like, and, like it feels like he goes to the lady for everything. And he, yes. he don't talk to Simone. Like anything that's happening in him and his personal life, he probably tells the other woman first. Like, what you think yes. I should do about blah, 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 blah.
Yes, absolutely. And listen, again, I think Simone has continually been painted as the person who was trying to keep this, you know, ship on its course. Mm-hmm. And Cecil was painted as the person who was doing everything to make the ship go off course. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's completely accurate just because I understand how television works and I understand how marriages work. I also understand these are very, very small moments in the grand scheme of their lives. Mm-hmm. But when you listen to it, man, like there was a sense of relief that I felt both of them had.
Definitely Simone. Simone definitely was like shit.
I think they loved each other. I think it was a very difficult thing for them to come to the realization that they were no longer in love with each other. Now, if something happened to Simone, there's no doubt in my mind that Cecil will jump on that highway and get to her.
And
vice versa. But I don't think they were in love. They did not look like a couple that have fun. And this is always my sign. They don't look like a couple that jokes around on other people.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have inside jokes.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Like when I look at Toya and Jean, I look at a couple that I feel like has inside jokes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, listen, I mean, she explained herself. Like she has not been happy for 10 years.
Yeah, that's a long time, bro.
It's a long time. I mean, think about the basics. Like, dude, your wife went and got another house and you didn't think that there was a problem here?
Yeah, a house.
A house, my nigga. Like a house. Yeah. Like y'all went and got y'all signed papers. Like a house is not, it's not even like buying a car. Like you could walk into the dealership and have you this fluttery feeling. You could drive a lot today. Right yeah. now. Mm-hmm. It don't work like that with a house. You know no. what I'm saying?
No, like, it's a whole process. It's a huge process.
I'm like, okay, it wasn't like, you know, this wasn't a fly-by-night decision here. So I honestly, man, I think it's probably best for them if they were to reunite at some point, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, would not surprise me at all.
Okay.
They are of age where this is a conversation that could be had.
Yeah, kind of get some shit off the out the system.
Yeah, that's pretty. I mean, that's pretty much it, man. And I mean, you know, watching them, you know, the other person that really sort of, you know, got on my fucking nerves was Curtis, man.
Oh, that niggas. Because first of all, Curtis ain't sorry at all. He not sorry at all. I just figured he didn't have nowhere else to go. He just got tired of living in some little raggedy ass apartment. But he ain't sorry about what he did. And I promise he gonna do it again. If he ain't, he's still in touch with the lady he fucked with before.
Like I said before, Curtis's issue is like a lot of guys, Curtis is not really cut for that sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And he didn't like feeling like he was the bad guy. He hated the fact that he had given Jackie that sort of black eye of embarrassment. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like he was jumping through those hoops to come back to smooth everything over. But I don't think anything has changed between either of them. This is just the surface right now. He's on his best behavior because he's trying to make things right. So he's going to take certain things. He's going to voice certain things, but he's going to take some on the chin as well. Yeah. And I mean, you know, again, these are folks that are at an age where the pickings might be slimmer than what you think it is.
Yeah, Jackie is not over what Curtis did, and I don't think she'll ever get over it. But she's like, yo, I'm in my mid 50s at least, And I, you know, I got, you know, money and I got to practice and I don't want to, I'm not interested in going out here and fucking getting on Kristen Mingle. Like I'm like, I'd rather just dance with the devil that I got. You know what I'm saying? Like she ain't over it, but she's like, you know what? I'm not trying to go back out here and be dating.
I know these flaws. I can deal with these flaws. Exactly. I don't want to have to learn new flaws.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I think that that's pretty much what it boiled down to. I mean, you know, other than that, I mean, the reunion.
What do you think about Quad and Greg?
Like I've always said, man, Quad tiptoes around the reality of not wanting to have given Greg that family that he asked for and had been asking for. Yeah. And now, you know, there's always an excuse.
Always.
Even from before. And now the excuse is, and I don't want to say excuse, but now her reason and her justification is, you know, look, we're in a terrible place right now. You know, well, you know, before it was, I don't want to do this now because of my career. I don't want to do this now because of this. And I don't want to do this now because of that. And, you know, the bottom line is it is what it is. And she doesn't want to have this kid. I mean, that's her choice, right? Mm-hmm. And Greg's an asshole, right? I think it's pretty common. It's sort of wild to see a doctor, a person, a psychiatrist, like a person who, you know, sort of dissects human behavior to some degree and should be communicating on a regular daily basis, is such a horrible communicator.
Yeah.
Like, he's terrible.
He's displaying all the shit that I'm sure he tells his patients not to do.
it's kind of weird and wild to look at, but I understand his dilemma, man, is that he's one of those dudes. I think he really sort of got the feeling that Quad was kind of fucking with him for the lifestyle that he was able to provide.
Yep.
While she was out there probably fucking with the dope boys and the dudes in the street, like you didn't want to have to deal with being kidnapped or somebody kicking your door in at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you might take a lesser lifestyle and fuck with a dude like that. That's a square.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it was. And I think she looked to change her life. I don't think she wanted to be around that shit. And, you know, Greg was, you know, he was there.
He was available.
Right? Like he checked the boxes.
Yeah.
But they didn't, I don't think she loved him because there's nothing about him that gives me the sense that the person he is now is a person that has transformed from a great guy to this guy.
Yeah.
I feel like this guy was always there.
I mean, she said it, and he kind of said it. He was like, yeah, I miss us, like, going out and having good times and going to the club. That's what it was. It was like a whirlwind.
I saw that part.
Yeah, it was like a whirlwind. Like, oh, yes, it's their marriage.
Girl.
Their marriage is kind of the, what's it called? I don't know if it's analogy is the right term, but, like, it kind of matches what kind of Atlanta can be. Like, you go in there for, like, a weekend, and it's a whirlwind. Like, oh, yeah, I went to the club, and with the kid, and went to brunch, and everything was popping, and blah, blah, blah. But then you got to live there. It's not like that every
time. And it's rainy on a Tuesday.
Exactly. And there's nobody outside. And that's what their courtship was. It was a whirlwind. They all went to the club, went here, went there. Greg bought me a watch, blah, 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 blah. And then when they got married and tried to settle down into normalcy, Quad was like, where's the whirlwind?
And I think
Greg was like, the whirlwind over, bro.
I think he was like, where's the whirlwind? Because what I heard him saying was, because I did see this part when Andy was like, what do you want, Greg? Because when he asked what Quad wants, Quad said she wants to know that she's appreciated without it being about material things. Greg said that when he first met her, she actually was on some everything for me. So he started by hitting her. I think he got her through a bunch of gifts and tricking out and whatever. But he was like, what he wants is time. And when he was saying he wants time, that's when he said, we used to go out, we used to do this, we used to be in the club. So I think it used to be an exchange for them. His thing was like, I'll set you up in a lifestyle and you're going to basically be on my arm.
Yeah.
Her own life and her own identity, and the rules changed. And I think that's where Greg is like, but that's not what I agreed to. Because even then, when Greg was saying, I appreciate her, I bought her that watch. That cost X amount of money. I bought her a range. Whatever. And everybody was like, yo, that's exactly what she keeps saying she wants you to stop doing. Like, find a way to do it other than talking about monetary stuff.
And that's what's crazy. It's like, we're telling men who, like, you take Cecil, you take Greg, you take, like, you're telling these guys who have had a certain level of behavior pretty much all their adult life to just basically pivot because you pivoted, right? Like this was all well and good when he was doing it. And this was how he was showing his appreciation, because this is, unfortunately, this is how a lot of men sort of see appreciation.
Yeah.
And it's how they
bought you this. I bought you that. I took you on a trip.
I bought you that. I sacrificed to get you X, Y, and Z. I bust my ass to get you X, Y, and Z.
I take care of you.
I take care of you. Like, that is, like, for a lot of guys, that is a sign of appreciation. I'm not, clearly, I'm not saying that that's right. I'm saying, to me, I think it's disingenuous to, just because you pivoted and you had a change of heart and because you had a change of feelings, that you're now subjecting that, you know, that bar has now, you basically, you just moved the goalpost on him. And that's what he said. Like, you keep we switched the mark.
Yeah.
Every time you tell me what it is you want to do, you switch the mark. And I think that happens more than people want to admit in marriages.
Mm-hmm.
That when things change and people evolve, because hopefully you are not the same person at, you know, 48 that you were at 32.
Yeah, yeah. And I also think, to your point with the switch to the mark thing, I think that part of, just to take it a little further, I think he was doing these things also thinking, okay, if I do all these things, she'll give me a kid.
That's it.
Like, and so she kind of like, didn't hold up her end of the bargain. He's like, I bought you the,
right.
That, to me, that was, he was articulating it bad again, which is bug, like Sean said, because he's a psychiatrist, so he should be able to do it. But like, he was basically saying like, look, I bought you a range, I bought you the Cartier, the Hublot bracelet, I took you on the trips, I blah, 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 blah. But I had told you that when we go over to Cecil and crib, or we would go over to Mariah and crib, and they have a Sunday dinner with the kids, that's what I want. That's the end game for me. And you told me that at a certain point, you would give me that. And Nick Sean said, you keep moving the bar. Like, where's my Sunday dinner with my two sons?
And the very interesting thing, and the last thing I'm going to say on them is that she accepts those gifts, right? Like it's very clear what those gifts represent, right? And those would probably be the most opportune times to have a conversation about what you actually want.
Yeah.
To say, you know what? I appreciate that you went out to do this for me. I understand the sacrifices that you do, you know, to make these things happen. But this doesn't really move me. This doesn't make, you know, like, I want X, Y, and Z. And give him something specific and not taking out the fucking garbage. Like, this shit is so much deeper than the garbage. Stop with the fucking trash.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, I mean, it is what it is with them. I mean, I think that...
I'm actually shocked that they haven't filed papers. I'm surprised. Like, I thought they would have been the ones to file first. I mean,
it could be, you know, like you said before, she's got some things popping. It could be some, you know, shifting of assets and maybe now is not a good time. And, you know, who knows what their situation is, but they clearly don't look like they want to be married.
Oh, they're not. Next thing I wanted to bring up was Fix My Life. Did you watch it, Nye?
Yes. I sure did.
Okay. I didn't know if you had seen it. It
is very much a mess.
This man, it's heavy as hell. This is, I think, a three-parter. I don't think it's four parts. It could be four parts. I don't know. It's at least three parts. Number three is this week. It's about these seven brothers and one sister who were raised in, I mean, dysfunction ain't even close to what they were raised in. They were raised in...
Oh, Lord, now we don't lost Jeffrey. Jeffrey, now you freezing up.
I'm freezing?
Yep. Is he freezing for you, Sean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, shit. Is that better?
Now you're good.
So they
were raised in?
Raised in a total of 85 foster homes between them.
Between them.
They're runaways. They were obviously broken up and, you know, never really been together as a full unit. The father still haven't gotten to the bottom of like what his real deal is. I've seen some people online kind of And they kind of, it sounds crazy, but it kind of makes sense. They think the father was kind of like pimping the mom.
That could work. That could be true.
Because it's like, because like Ayanna said, like the mother's still looks to be on some stuff, as bro likes to say. So like, so Ayanna made a very good point. She was like, and she would have them and leave the kids. She wouldn't have the kids and stick around. She would leave. So Ayanna kept saying, "Why?"
And she had a kid a year and like kept having all them kids. Yeah,
exactly. And so Ayanna was like, "Why would you have, you know, keep having children with this woman who doesn't want to stay and raise them with you?" But then somebody was like, maybe he was just pimping her and then, you know, like using her to turn tricks with drugs and all that. And in the process of getting her pregnant. I don't know, man, but it's a fucking disaster.
There's definitely still, I will say this, the mother seems more ready to take accountability for some things than, like, when Ayanna is basically like, where were you? She's like, smoking crack.
Yep.
Like, just in a very matter-of-fact way, she was like, I was on drugs, I was smoking crack. I was gone because I was smoking. Like, she says it just like this, I was smoking crack. Like, whatever. And, but when she asked the father, where was the mother, he's like,
I don't know.
She was in rehab. Like, nigga, you was in rehab for
15 years.
12 years? What the fuck? Yeah. Like,
California. She was like,
I don't really know. That's what she told me she was. And also, like, why did you give I don't even think we ever really found out why he gave the kids up to go into the system. Did we ever get to that?
No, not really. I mean, so he gave.
Oh, I don't need to get into that. I know exactly why that nigga gave them kids up.
Why he gave them?
Because there was seven of them niggas.
Because he an ain't shit ass nigga. That's why.
Yeah.
That's really why. Is. And he didn't want them kids to begin with.
Yeah. No,
I think he wanted them. I think he wanted them in theory. Because she said she had seven kids because his mama had seven kids. And he always said it had seven kids. I think he wanted them niggas that wanted a bunch of kids but didn't want to take care of a bunch of kids.
Didn't want to raise them.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The fun part is over now. Okay. Yeah. Now come the hard part, nigga. And he didn't want no parts of that.
He could walk around and be like, yo, I just had another son.
Yeah, you know, that's all this was about. I got, you know, I got seven boys. You know, I did it right. He was niggas.
Yeah. He's terrible. And the kids who are, you know, adults now, but they're just wrecked. It was very interesting to me, though. It was a couple of very interesting things to me as far as the boys went. Number one was, and, you know, I don't know if you or bro are going to, like, say this is bullshit, and you probably will, because y'all niggas is fucking cynical bastards, but when, but when Ayanna was making them breakfast in the kitchen and kind of had them all sitting around together, it seemed like they really wanted, like, a mom. You know what I'm saying? Like, she figured that out early and kind of was...
Yeah.
Playing on that, and they were really like into it. Like, even when there were two boys, remember the youngest boy and the hothead was really arguing and going at each other. And then when she came in, and she was like, "You shut your mouth, you get out the room." And they actually like did it. And then another thing,
they were responsive to it. Yeah,
very responsive to it. And the other thing about them, which I actually appreciate, is they really seem to be really into trying to be part of this process. Like, when she asked them stuff, like, how do you feel? And but like, they really like dig deep and talk about how they feel. They don't kind of shut down or be like, walk out the room or be like, I ain't fucking with this. But like, they really seem to be trying to figure, I appreciate them really. I'm not saying this is going to be, you know, this after this show is over, they're going to be, you know, the best of buddies, but at least they seem to be trying to work through some shit. You know what I'm saying?
I agree. They're more of the more responsive groups because there's always at least one who'd be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And even when they're like, fuck this to each other, they don't disrespect her.
No.
And I find that really interesting.
Yeah.
They don't, because usually you have somebody who'd be like, fuck you. I'm out. I'm not doing this shit. I don't give a fuck about what you want to do. Even when they disrespect each other, like when in the first episode when they were doing a team building exercise and one of the brothers walked away, because of the two of them that go at each other, one of them always assumes the other one is coming for him. He walked away. Ayanna was like, go back. And he went back.
And apologized for his actions. Like, I appreciate them trying to, like, really get something out of this. As, you know, not just like, oh, we're going to be on TV. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Well, you know what's interesting here? None of them have ever had someone pay any fucking attention to them. Like, that's for real.
That's
you know
real.
What I mean? Not like, and not want anything from them. Like none of them have ever had this on any level, any real level.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're responsive to it. Cause it's not even a case of, I had somebody love me and they hurt me. It's like, I literally had never had anybody care about me except my brothers, you know?
Yeah. No one ever gave a shit. You know what I'm saying? You could say, or if they did, it was something that, like, you know, was rape or some other crazy shit that they that happened at the end of it, you know? Bro, what you think? Cause you
like
said,
one of them said that, I'm sorry, one of them said that this was the first time they ever saw one of his brothers cry. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. And they're on their 30s. Like, they're like late 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
They're grown people, you know? But bro, I know you, we were talking about it on Twitter, and you said you were gonna say some shit for the show because you said you didn't like it. So I'm gonna let you have your platform.
Well, you know what? It's not.
Well, he didn't like that they was having a viewing party. I didn't like that shit either.
Well, that's garbage. We gonna get to that.
That to me, that was my issue. Also, my other issue is, I feel like. And this is not this isn't a shot to Iyanla, because again, I understand a little bit how television is made. And I know that this is not an easy show to make.
Right.
It is not easy to get people to open up their most deep wounds on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there are times when I do wonder if she is sort of, again, swimming out of her depth. And I don't think she's wrong here in any of her assessments. But I just don't
know. But you think they're manipulating her?
I don't know that they're... I think a lot of them are full of shit. A lot of those brothers, I think, are full of shit. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah,
and I don't mean this in a bad way. I mean this in a way that the nature of their survival depended on that. The nature of their survival depended on manipulation. I am always skeptical of those, you know, people who have those sorts of issues. And I'm not saying that they were, I don't know them, right? I just know what I saw on TV. I didn't believe everything I saw. And
what
I didn't
What didn't you believe?
You know, like when the brothers were, you know, they were going at each other and then they were like, okay, I'm going to try. I felt like that was, I'm going to tell these people what they want to hear so we can go, you know, we can keep moving.
See, I don't get that from this. I don't get that. That happens on the show a lot. But on this particular show, I don't get that they're saying shit just to say it. I don't get that.
Well, I can tell, I will say this, after seeing that whole viewing party shit, I watched it differently.
Well,
I put the viewing party on their daddy though.
I put that all on him.
What I'm saying is all of that replayed very differently for me.
Hmm.
So again, I'm not even upset with them, right? Like it's the nature of your life. I cannot imagine the shit that those young men have gone through to even still be alive today. So I'm not saying this in any sort of judgmental tone. I grew up in a house with loving parents and sisters who adored me. Like my experience ain't that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying this in a bad way, but I just kind of feel like, you know, they're brothers by blood only.
And
I feel like they go out of their way, because a lot of times, you know, we're sort of taught that, right? Like, this is your family. You guys got to stick together. And I think that I think they love each other, but they seem disjointed, disconnected. And again, I can't expect anything more from them.
But the thing is, they are brothers in name only because they actually didn't grow up together. Like,
that's my...
I think I remember at the beginning of the show, they said that this is the first time they had ever all been together at one time.
So they
don't really know each other.
So when you watch that father come in, right, and he comes in with this very nonchalant attitude.
Yeah, bop
he walking with a fucking Diddy bop. Like he's the shit. Like he's coming to sit at the head of this table and these are his kids. And it's just like, it's fascinating to me. Fascinating to me. And then, like Iyanla said, like, you guys completely ignore this other brother who had nobody.
The oldest brother.
Yeah. Yeah. The oldest brother. He had nobody to go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So it's,
it and was, they thought, it they, was they a, thought they were protecting him, but in actually they in actuality, they ignore him.
And, you know, listen, again, it's unfortunate because you're basically, you're telling children, you're giving the responsibility parenting to a child. Yeah. You're right. You're telling the 10-year-old he's got to protect the 15-year-old because the 15-year-old right. don't know any better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And so guess what? That's all he's ever going to see. I got to make sure he's okay. Don't say nothing. Don't sign this. Don't do this. Don't, you know, them people just want your check. Don't go over here. Don't, like, you know, it's complete chaos and dysfunction. And to be honest, man, like a woman having an addiction is one thing. And that's something that is, you know, obviously it was real. It was, you know, spoke to how, you know, crack really did tear the asshole out of a lot of families.
Right.
But an addiction is very different than a motherfucker who just walks away.
Yeah.
And then we found out that she had a daughter older than all of them that she did the same shit with.
Yep.
So to me, he's really the fucking piece of shit here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The father's the piece of shit. And that's what I said. When I saw that flyer I sent to y'all, I right away I was like, because if you look on the flyer, the picture of him and I guess it's like four of the kids, the picture's old because one of the kids got dreads now. Another kid, like you could tell it's taken a few years ago. Like,
but the mother's in it too.
Yeah, but I was looking. I was like, is that the mother? Because the mother, that woman looks so much heavier. Maybe the mother like lost a bunch of weight because of drugs or whatever. But I definitely, it could be. But I was looking at it like that viewing party was all the father's doing. Like, I don't think maybe some of the kids
were
showing up, but I think it was him.
Or maybe it was like, maybe we can get a couple dollars. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't presume to know. I guess that's the best way.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see part three next week. And
I'm just kind of like, who wants to invite people in? No, he means part. Yeah, there's another part. Because now we got to deal with the daughter.
Yeah, I'm good.
And her issues.
Were you out?
Because the daughter hasn't been fucking with the brothers, thinking that her mom wasn't with her because she was with them.
And vice versa.
And the brothers haven't been fucking with her because even when their mom wasn't with them, even though the mom wasn't with the daughter was raised by the grandmother, so she was fine. Like, she had everything except her mom.
And you can tell by the way she talks and everything that she carries.
Yeah.
She's educated.
She's educated and she says something. She's like, you know, the material things and the trips and the this and the that. And they looking at her like y'all was like they was living in a car.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And meanwhile,
come on, Shorty.
Yeah, you going
you chilling.
You going to Mexico and shit. And I'm sleeping in a car and shit, you know, freezing. I wanna mention this whole DJ Envy D'Souza and Mero fiasco or whatever you want to call it situation. So D'Souza and Mero were on the Breakfast Club last week. They're really good friends with Charlamagne. Like they thought they're really good friends with Envy. And as soon as the show starts, Envy has a terrible attitude and goes at them, calls them dickhead and pussy, and then right away says, "You owe my wife an apology because you said my wife was only with me for the money and she's known me since I was 15 and you could disrespect me all day, but you can't disrespect my wife and my kids." First of all, he didn't actually say that.
That's not actually what he said. Yeah. Not what Envy said. Yeah.
No, exactly. That's the point. First of all, he didn't mention D'Souza. They didn't mention his children at all, number one. Right. At all. And number two, it was a clip that they were showing of DJ Envy and his wife on The Real. And she was like, you know, he basically said, when I was at home, I was with Sean, but when I was in the streets, I was DJ Envy. And then D'Souza watching the thing says, yeah, but you knew those DJ Envy checks though.
Yeah, she said, I didn't know DJ Envy.
Yeah, and he said,
and Mero said, but you knew that DJ Envy
checks though. So he ran with that. I mean, I took it as obviously he's still going through that.
That was guilt to me.
Yeah, he's still going through mad shit at the crib.
That was guilt to me.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I'm assuming his wife found out they was going to be on the show, and mentioned it to him, like, yo, you know, you put them niggas in their place, because let them know I ain't with you for your money and blah, 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 blah. But these, Meryl, one of them did say some funny shit. It was like, yo, like, you went on the fucking, the real, dressed like you was going to Essence. Like, they were so overdressed and, like, so, like, over the top. It's like,
but also, if you've ever been to Envy's wife's page,
I don't go. What's it like?
Everything is fucking superficial and materialistic. So, like, everything is designer. Like, the kids are dressed alike. It's all about the house and the designer. It's all about what shoe, what bag, what vacation, what whatever. Envy does this thing called 12 Days of Christmas with her, where he gives her a different set of gifts every day. And it's always like 3 Chanel bags, 4 pair of Louboutins, this Cartier, this something every day. And it's like multiple things every day. And every day she stages them and photographs them and writes out what the card said. He puts little limericks in the card to rhyme with whatever he bought her. So, like, I think what Envy was projecting, because A, I'm sure that's not the first time he heard that.
Hell no.
And B, clearly the way he fixes shit is with money. But gifts and money and cars and whatever. Yep. And that plus let's have this other baby and like whatever. So nigga, that's on you. Like but my thing is like Miro ain't wrong. Like maybe you're not happy with the way he said it, but like clearly, ma'am, you do know that Envy check because your lifestyle reflects it and you love to show off your lifestyle, whether it's been 20 years, 30 years, high school, college, whatever the fuck, your whole page says that shit up and through and whatever, and it's the whole shit, right? And secondly, like, I think that for Envy, and the thing with Desus and Miro, and the reason a lot of people like Envy, whatever the fuck, because A, this is what you do all day, every day. This is exactly what y'all do, y'all, meaning Breakfast Club. Secondly, you let Erica Mena sit up here and talk all the shit that the woman that you actually fucked, the woman that you cheated on your wife with, sat in this chair, talked all kind of shit, but you coming at me? Cause I said one thing about a check, fuck out of here. You know what I mean? So, it's just like,
well, Envy, I mean, look, Envy did a lot of dumb shit. This was one of them. Another thing was when he got caught with the Erica Mena, we got caught, you know, with the Erica Mena affair. He basically did what he did with Desus and them. He went up on the radio and all of a sudden she was dirty skank and she's just horrible skank.
But not when she was there.
That's what I'm saying.
He didn't do that while she was there.
No, while she was there. I'm saying, but it was the same day he got caught, cause then they called his wife on the phone and he apologized.
He apologized. I remember that.
Yeah, he was like, she was a dirty skank bitch. And it's like, fam, you was with this girl for 3 years. 3 years is a long fucking time. You have spent a lot of time with her. I wasn't gonna trick off on her, but you spent a lot of intimate time with someone in 3 years time. So now for you to turn around and say she's a skank bitch and a dirty whore and all that, it's like, fam, like, really? And I think to me, that's one of Erica's, Erica got her shit with her and I'm not caping. But I think that's one of the batteries in her back. Like, well, as far as Envy goes, it's like, really? Like, when you was, like, crying to me about this or that, or kind of talking, to, you know, pillow talking to me about whatever the hell was going on, including, I'm sure shit going on in his marriage, it was sweet. But as soon as, like, you get caught, and then I'm a dirty skank whore. It's like, so it's kind of same thing with Desus and Meryl. That's like, Desus was like, I thought we were cool. Like, why are you coming to me like, now all of a sudden you want to fight because your wife is mad at you, so now you got to come at me like this, like, but, you know, and just like with them, there's no repairing it now. It's like, okay, that's over.
Right.
You're never going to be cool again because, you know, as soon as your wife gets mad again, then you're going to flip. Like, so the way he's doing it is really like, and again, I'm not saying he shouldn't take up for his wife or his family. It's not what I'm saying at all. But the way he's doing it is like, come on, fam. You know, bro, what you got to say about it?
Listen. there's something that men have to learn, which is called, this is an old saying, leave well enough alone. Okay. And sometimes just shut the fuck up. Okay. Like, because no one thought Desus and Meryl were disrespecting your wife.
Nobody. Mm-hmm.
And that's not really their MO. Can they listen? I don't watch their show. It's not really my bag. God bless them. I wish them well.
They clown, but they're not mean spirited.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. They're sophomoric. But they're not really like, you know,
it's more hateful. Snark. Yeah, it's more snark.
You guys, and this is the shit that bothered me, is like when you guys stand on this pillar of respect, and I sat here and I watched that interview, when you guys were idle while Charlamagne made a fucking young lady cry on air for amusement. Mm-hmm. And you guys fucking sat there. You didn't jump in. You didn't chime in. You didn't say, yo, you like didn't change the subject. Nothing. Mm-hmm. And you guys do this shit regularly. Like, who do you think the people that you talk about are? Like, you don't think the people that you guys talk shit about have children and have families and have wives and husbands, right, and people that care about them? Like, you guys don't give a fuck about that, okay? And guess what, my nigga? Like, when it happens to you, it happens to you.
Yeah.
Eat the shit.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And what's crazy to me is, like this nigga was mad. Like
got up and left.
Yo, he got up and left, and your man that you work with every day was giggling.
Clowned.
Yo, my nigga. Your man that you fucking go to work with every day, that you sit idle by and watch him talk crazy to people, knowing it's wrong. Like, he fucking laughed at your face.
Mm-hmm.
At your anger. Come on, my nigga. Like, what are we talking about here?
Told him to turn the camera on the empty chair and all that.
Yo, it was wild to me is that was a conversation, in my opinion, man to man, that he should have had with them. That shit happened a while back, so it was just kind of weird to come out of no place. And like Jeff said, that's purely, you know, something that comes from the crib. Let me tell you something about a man. Like, no man wants to be in an uncomfortable home. Yep. And if it means he needs to make, you know, ruckus in your crib or turn your shit upside down or put upheaval in your house and in your life, he gonna do that shit to go to sleep at night.
Yep.
Right.
Especially if he don't fuck with you. Like, if that's not his, so that to me, and looking at it from his perspective, is it was well worth it.
Yeah.
Right. It was well worth it because I don't have to ever hear this argument or the fact that I didn't defend you, which was, again, when you listen to it in context, like it's amazing to me that that's what stuck out.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah, I'm on IG. I see the shit that people say and the shit that people leave. And I'm on social media. Like, people are fucking cruel.
And that's what Merrill was saying. He was like, fam, the shit they be saying to me about my kids and my white Jewish wife is brutal. Like, the fuck? Like, and we said like a little slick joke, and we're the worst motherfuckers in the world. And to me, the bigger point and everybody made this point because it was so blatant, it was like, Envy's talking about, yo, don't disrespect my family, don't disrespect my wife. It's like, nigga, you disrespected your wife.
Right. But you did that.
You did that. I didn't disrespect your wife. I just commented on you disrespecting your wife.
And here's another thing. When you are in a relationship and you have made a conscious effort to make the relationship a part of your brand, then your relationship is fair game.
There it is.
You do not get to pick and choose when your wife and your children are off limits.
Yeah.
If you don't think, you see the shit that people used to say about fucking Russi. You don't think Run and them, like, saw that shit? Like, people talk about your kids. When you put your children on television, when you put your children as a part of your business and a part of your brand, then yes, my nigga, people will talk about them. People talked about fucking Blue Ivy's hair. She was like, like a year old.
Remember that? Yep. Killing.
Like, people are fucking cruel. And if the line in the sand is a joke.
Whether I know you.
Yeah, and when the line in the sand is made to be so hard and so harsh for something that is seemingly missed by everyone else, my nigga, like, if that's what's gonna get you to fighting, then you just never gonna not be fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it ain't gonna get no better than that.
Yeah, it's never gonna get no lighter than that either.
That's my point.
That's some light shit.
And now you've taken something that really you should have went in there and said, yo, I'm going to address this on air, but you owe my wife an apology. She's very upset about what happened. I didn't like it. And dot, dot, dot. You could have just did that from gate, dude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you calling them pussy and dickhead. Like, what are you fucking in the third grade?
Yeah, like five years old.
Come on,
yeah.
Bro. Like it looks crazy.
I'm sure.
But I do want to say, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm sure he called his wife later on. You saw what I said, right? Da, 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 da.
Right. But what I do want to say that somebody else pointed out is Jesus and Meryl were very, like, Meryl was hot because he was kind of like, fam, what the fuck? But both of them were pretty even killed about the whole thing. Like, all right, my fam, oh, you mad? Okay, we sorry then. Well, shit.
And you know what? And you know whatever. What? And that's what, and I'm going to tell you.
I think that's what made Envy hot.
That's what made him hot. Once they apologized and they took that power away from him to keep going and keep berating this and beating this like a dead horse, then he was pissed because he had nothing else to say.
Yep. And that's why he got up and left.
He couldn't move on. He like he physically could not move on.
Yep. And
like if you were that hot, my nigga, like I don't understand how they kept you off somebody's ass. If you was that upset.
Exactly. Right. And coupled with what you said, bro, which is they stopped it and then they immediately go into the interview with Charlamagne and they're giggling and Charlamagne's giggling back. Like they're having a good old time, basically ignoring the thing that you said. They're like, oh, yeah, whatever. Like, so what about the show? What's going on? Like, so he's looking at it like, damn, these niggas are moved on. My man, like you said, my man, who I thought was my man, is helping them move on. You know, Angie's helping them move on. It's like, it was.
He got it them the next day at Angie and Charlamagne for that, did he?
I don't listen to that show. I think, look, God bless him. I don't like to talk bad about people. I think Charlamagne's a... or whatever. I don't listen to the show. I don't watch the show. I wish him well.
Yeah. And now the rumor is, well, Erica Mena tweeted the other day that she's going to be on there.
Soon.
Yeah, she's going to be on there, which I knew was going to happen. I'm like, because those niggas is like, word? Okay. And I was going to bring her on here. It's a
but they don't play but so dirty. So I don't think it's going to be as awful as it could be if roles were reversed if she was going on Breakfast Club because... they're still a little more highbrow than the Breakfast Club, not for nothing. But, yeah.
They'll say some slick shit.
Because I think she's going on because she's promoting Love & Hip Hop Atlanta, too.
But also what they do, but what he's giving them is he's giving them a go-to.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's giving them a go-to. So at every turn, they're going to twist that. They're going to put that screwdriver in his back and twist it.
So, peace to you, DJ Envy. You played that all wrong.
Let's talk about Academics is happy, though. They got him off his back.
Got him off his neck, exactly. Let's talk about Toys R Us. Toys R Us filed court documents to close. I didn't kind of think about it through. It's not just Toys R Us, it's Babies R Us, too.
Yeah.
All that stuff's closing down.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because, they're under the same umbrella. Right. So they're closing 182 locations across 40 states. They already started to have the blast out sale. I think it starts tomorrow, 22nd, is the start of the sale. And so if you need anything for Toys R Us, electronics or whatever, like tomorrow's going to be lit. Like going there, everything's slashing prices crazy because they got to try to move as much inventory as possible. It seems like they kind of got caught out there by just not fully being prepared for the onslaught of Amazon and online.
It's not just that.
And online shopping.
At one point, they had a partnership with Amazon that Amazon defaulted on. Then,
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, at one point, they had a partnership with Amazon that Amazon defaulted on. I don't know the specifics, but it was something where they were going to be able to ship through Amazon.
It was a 10-year deal, and I think they backed out of the deal after like year three or four. This was like very early.
Amazon backed out.
We could do it ourselves.
Right. So, but then recently, they were acquired by a couple of major corporations, and that was actually the nail in their coffin because, apparently that's what drove for the bankruptcy. And Sean, this may be something you may better be able to explain than me, but somebody was saying something like the way the corporations handled the debt or handled the financial forecasting for the next year actually left them in a deeper hole than they were before. So they might have been okay without the takeover.
I don't
might have been okay.
See, I've seen several people say that. I got a couple of articles from a couple folks on Twitter that showed me that. And when I started to read the articles, it's pretty clear that the articles were sort of spun and angled in a way that sort of showcased the private equity firm as, you know, sort of the big bad wolf, right? Like this was right. This was the reason that this store was closing. But the more articles I read, and these are like reputable places, you know, Business Insider, the Wall Street Journal, places like that, they were $5 billion in debt when those private equity, they were $5 billion in debt when those private equities came in. The issue became the private equity company did a shit job at leveraging them out of that debt. That's what the private equity company was supposed to do, except they didn't do it. Basically, Toys R Us was paying $400 million a year in interest alone.
Damn. Jesus Christ.
So from what I'm gathering, and I haven't really dug really deep into this, but it's actually crazy because one of my neighbors and a friend of mine is in private equity. Like this is, you know, he's a part of that. You know, that particular culture anyway. So I wanted to sort of kick it with him. But basically from what I gathered was that this product, they had massive debt. And the issue, the reason I'm bringing that up is because people kept saying, well, it was the private equity, but it was the private equity. And I'm like, well, private equity doesn't really happen in really healthy companies, right? Like we know that private equity is not going to take over Apple.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, so there was some hamstring. There was some things already at play with Toys R Us. And again, and like I've said before, they were way behind the eight ball in consumers, in consumerism. They did not, even though they moved units. I mean, they had a share of the market, but they had such a large physical footprint. They had so many brick and mortar stores.
You think the brick and mortar is really what kind of started to hurt?
No, I don't necessarily know it was that. I think it was a perfect storm of shit. I think the need for toys began to change. I think the availability, the ability to online shop, the ability to go to eBay, the ability to price match, I think changed it. Toys R Us is grossly overpriced, always has been. You know, when you go into stores now, when you go into Target, when you go into Walmart, when you go into places that can also sell you groceries, you know, panty liners and fucking T-shirts and toys, like you're not really, there was nothing exclusive about what you would get from Toys R Us.
True.
And I think that people are, you know, while I think that private equity had something to do with this, I don't think that it is the big bad wolf that it's being portrayed in some of the articles, in my opinion. I see why people can say that, but to pretend that Toys R Us would have been a healthy company without, like, if this private equity company never came in, to pretend that Toys R Us was perfectly fine, everything was operating normal. Like,
well, I hadn't heard that. I just heard that they might have been able to eke through for a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, listen. So the difference is that they would have been closing, you know, in August instead of March. You know what I'm saying? Like this is what we're like. It's like we want to paint this as such a bad thing. And there are times when these private equity firms have gotten people out of debt. That, you know, I believe it was Payless that came out of debt. With this, I'm not. I think maybe Sears is doing this right now. Like, and a lot of these places are heavy on brick and mortar stores. They have poor online presence. They have dated inventories. Like, kids don't even play with toys like that
anymore. See, that's what I was going to say.
That's true too.
All the toys today are all like video games and, you know, stuff like that. It's not like, you know, toys you run around and, you know, shoot guns and all that shit like kids used to do before.
When I go into Toys R Us, I'm actually apt to see more men my age than kids, because we'll go in and maybe get a collectible or some shit like that, or, you know, buy some like a super high end, you know, car or something like that, you know, a race car or something like that. But like, this is not this. You can go into Toys R Us, dude. It's like a fucking ghost town. It's like a fucking ghost town in there.
Yeah,
I really only do Babies R Us. I can't remember the last time I had to go into Toys R Us.
Think about that. Think about when's the last time you saw a baby in a stroller in the city with a Barbie doll?
You don't
really even see that shit. Like, I mean, it's just not something. I think culture has changed. I think that they were really, like I said, dude, they had that big store at Times Square.
Yeah.
And remember, I talked about that. I said I had gone into that store. And what I noticed into that store was it was enormous.
Two, yeah, it was a Ferris wheel in that store.
It was a lot of people, right? But there was never any lines to buy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a tourist trap. And
that's all it was. It was a tourist attraction. It was not moving commerce. It was not. I can't imagine what it cost to have that place there.
Yeah. Well, it costs a lot because it ain't there no more.
Yeah.
And it's been going for a minute. You know, it's been going for
so
a minute.
So I think I say all that to say, I think that the people who are saying that the private equity didn't do what it was supposed to do or what it came in to do are correct. And that's, you know, those are like financial instruments that I'd have to really sit down and sort of understand that shit. It could get really tricky. But the reality is that they came in to take the debt. They siphoned the money off the debt. I don't know if that went to interest or if they cooked the books and just bled them or what. Maybe it was a roll of the dice in the hopes that, you know, they could probably change this around if they can restructure the debt. It didn't work out. And guess what? Sometimes that happens, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was still sad. I mean, you know, I ain't been to Toys R Us since I was a child.
Yeah. I was never really a Toys R Us kid, so I can't even be like, my childhood.
And it's crazy because everybody acting like they was in Toys R Us every other week.
Yeah, like
oh, you know, now all you niggas was in Toys R Us now. Yeah.
I mean, I was in it probably more recent than many because I used to take Julian there, but even that's been shit, damn it, 20 years ago.
I was getting ready to say, nigga, what?
You know, we ain't been there since he probably was, you know, 7 or 8 or 10.
Julian contributing to a 401k now, man. What are you talking about?
But yeah, that's actually real and paying taxes.
Yeah.
But by the way, I just got to say peace to Julian. He just copped a new job at Pendleton Bikes.
Nice.
So he's going
to
be one.
Don't have everybody going up to that boy job. Look at that.
They're going to
be like your daddy.
I know your daddy, boy.
Yeah, exactly. Give me one of them bikes half price. Mm-hmm. You know, so he's going to be in there filming the people who do the, you know, they got the program, you know, that
interactive. Pendleton Bike is an interactive bike.
Yeah.
And what it does is it has a screen on there and you can take classes on the bike.
Exactly.
So Julian is going to be in studio. He's not going to be selling Pendleton bikes.
Yeah. He'll be the one filming the interactive part.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that because motherfuckers would have been
shocked. Well, Jeff went full black daddy. You know, I don't know what that boy. I know he go down to work.
I just
every
know
day.
He be up there. Damn it, he's very important too. They can't even run that shit without that boy.
They can't do nothing without him.
They call him all the time. Shit. No, so yeah, whatever. But anyway, peace to him. I also want to just give a quick shout out to this Mr. Rogers. Is a Mr. Rogers documentary coming on?
I'm so in the house for that.
It's in a movie theaters, correct?
It's movies. Yeah, it's being released.
It's being released. So their trailer popped up. I guess they showed it at Sundance this past year, and they, according to all reports, like literally, the whole theater's bawling like babies. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I was almost crying watching that shit for real.
So the people who saw it were saying like, wait till you see the movie. You're going to be crying like a child, like watching this movie. So,
yo, I was watching that trailer and I did grow up on Mr. Rogers. It was because Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street used to come on. No, Mr. Rogers came on later. But at any rate, I was a Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers kid. And just something about, and this is why I saw a lot of people saying, something about just his voice in the trailer, just how calming and soothing and even it is, and I think something about us being in a time such as now where everybody feels fucking crazy
and on edge
and it just felt like a sweater, you know what I mean, like it was just like shit. You know, yeah. And that's the one person I've been so happy. Like, I remember one day online, somebody was like, I have a story about Mr. Rogers. And I was so scared to read it because I thought it was going to be some bad shit. And I was like, I can't take it. And he literally said that it was good. He ran into Mr. Rogers in an elevator much later. Like, Mr. Rogers was off TV and older. And Mr. Rogers said something about how he looked down. Like, the guy, I guess, was looking down or sad. And, like, literally said some real life Mr. Rogers shit to him. You know what I mean? About just, like, not being blue and being encouraged, keeping your heads up and people caring about you. And I was like, thank God. Like, I needed to know that Mr. Rogers was really Mr. Rogers, you know, and not like Mr. Rogers tried to grab my ass in the elevator. I would have really been distraught.
Yeah. Mr. Rogers pulled his dick out.
And Mr. Rogers like, fuck you, fucking faggot. I needed to know.
Man up, you bitch ass nigga.
I like you niggas, no way. No, I really needed to know that Mr. Rogers was Mr. Rogers, and it just restored a little bit of my faith in humanity. But
he was really like that. Like, that wasn't an act. That's really
who
he was. And everybody who has a story about an encounter with him is basically has that type of story. Like, he that's who he was.
Right.
It wasn't no dark secrets and shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, only dark secret he has, he actually served in, I think, Korea.
And he never talked about it.
And never talked about it because he saw was too painful. But, you know, again, the person you saw is, and I think that, again, kind of to your point, Nye, that's what's also coming through on the trailer. It's like, yo, that was really him. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he was really, it wasn't like, oh, the expose of Mr. Rogers. It's like, nah, that was really like who he was.
You know, the crazy thing is the fact that we're in an era where that's some revolutionary shit right now. Like, this documentary is actually some revolutionary shit. Like, because. Yeah. Mr. Rogers would, that show would possibly not work anymore. Wonder Woman say that. She said, you take all the elements that make great TV and do the exact opposite. It was low pro. It was no antics, no clowns hopping all over the place, no loud noises. You know what I mean? It was really very like, I'm going to just sit here and talk to these kids. And we got some hand puppets and we got make believe land over here going on a little train that is clearly like fake. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it was so basic. It was so basic.
Yeah.
But it worked. It really worked.
So, I think, like, in a wild way, because of, like you said, because of the time that we're in and the craziness that we're in, I think this documentary is going to do really well.
This shit about to blow up.
It's about to blow up. Like, niggas is going to be in there going to see it 2-3 times crying.
And then on the heels of that, Tom Hanks is about to be in a Mr. Rogers biopic or biopic.
That's right. I read about that too. So yeah. So God bless Mr. Rogers. I wanted to mention, our condolences to all the people who died in this Miami bridge collapse.
Yeah.
Which is, horrible. They found five bodies and a sixth five bodies were recovered at the actual bridge, and a sixth person died in the hospital. They don't think there's anybody left underneath all the rubble, and that's what they're saying, you know.
Another maybe 6 or 7 injured as well. They actually had the first funeral, I believe it was yesterday, of a couple, life partners that had gone, that they were in the car. They were crushed in their car. And I think they were also a part of the first lawsuit, the first, you know, signs of lawsuits have come in. And they're basically suing everyone, man. I mean, it was a engineering company. And at this point, I don't think that they've determined whether or not it was engineering or construction.
Right.
At fault at this point. I mean, I'm pretty sure that this is still super, super early and, you know, everything they're finding is preliminary, but there are a couple companies, and this particular company that was the construction company is, it's portrayed, it sells itself as this sort of family business like this. So when you hear things like it's a family business, you think of like a mom and pop shop, and there's like, you know, Tony and fucking Joe.
They got
a lumberjack. No, this is five brothers. One of them was a lawyer. They are well connected all the way up to DC. They have collectively, they've given over $500,000 to campaigns. Like these are big ticket guys. So we're going to see how this plays out. the Florida, I think it's Florida, I can't, International University.
Yeah, FIU.
FIU. Mm-hmm. It was on their campus. Apparently this guy was an alum, you know, probably also how he got the bid. It's also a legit construction company. I don't want to make it seem like they, you know, they just got the bid just because, like, they're a legit outfit. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. They're going to be tons and tons of lawsuits. And so, you know, rest in peace to those people, man. And, you know, it was weird because they did not build that on site.
They transferred it, right?
Yeah. Yes,
they constructed it off or like adjacent to the highway. And then they sort of closed off the highway and then they put it together almost like a puzzle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was, you know, there was also signs of cracks in the bridge because they just put that. The bridge was only up for about 5 days before.
Yeah, five days before it fell. Yeah,
there were cracks. So they kind of like, well, you know, they're tracing back now and we'll see what happens. But it's really unfortunate.
Yeah. I also want to say a rest in peace. I mean, I guess it's rest in peace to Stephen Clark, who is a black man who was shot by the police 20 times in his backyard for carrying his cell phone, which they claim they mistake for a gun.
Well,
in Sacramento, California.
Yeah, they've gotten some reports that they got a 911 call that someone in the area had been breaking into cars and that someone had, and this person had most recently broken a neighbor's screen window their back patio window in an attempt to get in their house. Mm-hmm. And there were police helicopters flying overhead. They said they saw a suspect with a crowbar, and I guess whatever direction they said they were going, the guy was going in. The police claim that in pursuit, looking for that suspect, they came across Stephen. They say that Stephen was running from the scene of this attempted break-in, ran to his grandparents' house, hopped the fence. They pursued him into the yard. This is what the police say. They pursued him into the yard. They thought he advanced towards them with his arm outstretched with something in his arm. So they fired on him 20 fucking times. They said they also saw him looking in the window of his grandparents' house and he advanced towards them. Oh, and they asked him to stop. He didn't stop. He ran around to the back of the house. They went to the back of the house. He advanced on them. He had his arm outstretched. They shot him. So they tried to say he had a crowbar. Then they said he had a gun. Then they realized it was his cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
His family says that the doorbell didn't work. So really what probably just happened is that Stephen was coming home and you had to knock on the back window.
On the back window to get grandma's attention.
To tell
attention.
Somebody to open the door.
Exactly.
And that's what the cops saw. Now what's going to happen, unfortunately, with Stephen? Stephen just got out of jail. Not too long ago, and he's got a record and he's been in and out of jail, and they're gonna try to paint that, you know, around him as justification for what happened, which is awful. But he was only 22. He leaves behind two kids. He was trying to get his shit together. Like, he was staying at his grandparents' house trying to figure it out, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, I mean, you know, we've been through this 10 million times, but I always hate the narrative of, well, he ran. That means, I mean, you kill somebody. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, when is,
like,
running,
he still
running
didn't do
a
anything,
sentence?
especially not that married. 20 shots? 20 shots, my nigga. Like,
he ran, then he looked in the window, so we shot him 20 times. Like, really? Like, that's all it takes? That's all it takes. It's crazy, man. It's just exhausting. It's really exhausting. I wanted to end up with Texas.
Austin.
The Texas, Austin, you know, the Austin bombings, Texas bombings. So they found and killed, they found the suspect. They were chasing the suspect, Mark, what's his name? Mark,
I don't remember his name.
Mark Anthony Condit, 23 years old. And he blew himself up in the car, when the cops were chasing him. I think it was a total of 6 bombs that he was kind of sending through FedEx, and
not all of them went through FedEx.
Okay,
but that's how they caught him.
Yes, I was going to say they actually caught him because of the last few bombs that he sent out were through FedEx.
Yeah.
He was using the postal service as well.
Yeah. And they were sent, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but sent to all black and brown people, correct?
Except for the last few.
Yeah.
The first few were, they were sent to affluent black neighborhoods, but the last couple weren't, I think. As a matter of fact, one, I think, actually just went off like at a Goodwill or something. I don't know.
One went off in the FedEx facility.
All right.
Okay. And then I know one of them, they said, didn't go off for some reason. And that was how they were really able to kind of track them down, because they could, you know, they took it apart and you obviously looked, found out where it was coming from and how it was built. And then they traced back to like, okay, he got these type of nails. Where would he buy them? And they kind of, you know, went backwards and kind of went through, I guess, Home Depot and places like that. And then looked at the security of surveillance and figured out who was buying the stuff that he was making the bombs with. So, I mean, you know, like I said, initially it seemed like it was racial. I mean, maybe it was, but maybe he did the other stuff to kind of throw people off a trail. I don't really know. I mean, you will never really know really what this was about. I don't really know. You know, I don't understand what this was about.
He was a white male Christian homeschool conservative.
There we go. That's it.
23 years old.
And of course, the narrative that the lonely, quiet, isolated nerd narrative is already in play. Like, y'all gotta stop with this shit. You know what?
The playbook is so wild.
Oh my God. Man. Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, you know how many isolated, lonely, bullied, antisocial young women there are out there? These motherfuckers ain't shooting up schools and sending people bombs. Like, stop with this bullshit. Like, for real. Yeah. It's like, come on. Like, really? Already the neighbors are like, I can't even understand it. He was such a quiet boy. Yeah, he was quiet because he was plotting. Maybe y'all should have talked to that nigga to try to figure out what the fuck he was up to. You know?
Exactly. Sidebar, they also arrested, what's his name, Cruz's brother this past week, because he went to Stonewall Jackson High School because he claimed he wanted to see the location of where all the damage his brother did. They arrested him for trespassing. No, it was his brother. It was his brother.
That was Dylan Roof's sister.
Dylan Roof's sister got arrested for taking a gun and scissor. Come on, y'all.
Yeah, that was a whole separate thing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, obviously, this shit is also running in the family. So they also need to restore. I don't know legally what you can do, but, like, the parents of these people are obviously putting a lot of this shit in their heads with children, and they, you know, and they just setting it and they're condoning it because, you know, you got siblings kind of moving in the same way.
Yeah.
You know, so
because parents are also ignoring it, or they're just trying to pray it away,
or they're accepting it and they're drilling it in. Stay away from those darkies down the street and all that type of shit. You know, so it's crazy out here, man. It's crazy out here. It's getting crazy.
Oh, you know, we almost forgot. Before we go, we a lot of you guys have been saying or have been telling us actually for years about how you talk back to us. Argue back to us, yell back at us while you're listening to the show. So now we want to give you a chance to get in on it on a little deeper level. So starting now, as you hear this, you can tweet us or DM us or email us at thepoplifepodcast@gmail.com with your questions, your comments, or even if you want, you know, to get our take on something that's going on, a little bit of advice, get our point of view on something, you know, do that at your own risk. But hit us up, and every show will now have a segment where we address a couple of you guys' emails, tweets, or DMs. So we're going to do a little mailbag segment moving forward.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's it. We're going to wrap it up. Everybody stay warm and safe, and we will see y'all next week.
Later. Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.